Hello, Illinois Radio Reader listeners. This is Elizabeth McMahon with the News Gazette for Thursday, February 20th, 2025. I'm going to start today on the front page. We'll do local and national news, then move in the second half to obituaries and sports. The front page today has a very large photo of Governor J.B. Pritzker with a headline right over the top of the fold here that says, Gaining Traction, Area Community College Admins Welcome Proposal for Four-Year Degrees. And I'll start here. That photo there is the caption reads, During Wednesday's annual budget address, Governor J.B. Pritzker proposed growing spending by about $2 billion without new income or service taxes in the upcoming fiscal year, though his administration acknowledged policy changes by the Trump administration could drastically alter the fiscal landscape. The story is by Dave Hinton of the News Gazette. Students at Parkland College in Champaign and Danville Area Community College could be able to complete four-year baccalaureate degrees if a proposal outlined by Governor J.B. Pritzker in his budget address Wednesday is passed by the Illinois General Assembly. Parkland President Pam Lau said she sees no drawbacks to the measure, which many community college officials have favored for some time. We are excited by the proposal, Lau said. Illinois is not the first state to think about this, said Lau, citing that nearly half of the states in the country have similar programs. It's about time Illinois joins the movement because our focus is on access. DACC Interim President Randy Fletcher said the proposal has become more likely to become reality. With this recognition through legislation and Governor Pritzker's address, it's gaining a lot of traction, giving community colleges great hope that the measure will be approved, Fletcher said. There are 48 community colleges in Illinois. Only those that follow through and meet the criteria will be able to offer the four-year degrees, according to Fletcher. We're just hopeful that the legislation will move forward and we'll get instruction on the next step, Fletcher said. We want to continue our strong partnership with our senior universities. Lau said community college officials have been advocating for such a program for some time. Maybe it was new and our messaging was not as clear, she said when asked why such a program had not been developed before. We are intentional about explaining why this would be good for all and not an undue competition with our four-year partners. Lau said if adopted, the program would not harm Parkland's Pathways program, which is designed to accommodate a smooth junior-level transfer to the University of Illinois for those who first attend Parkland full-time for 2 years and are seeking a degree. The goal of the program, outlined by Pritzker, would be to make four-year degrees more accessible to working adults, particularly those who don't live near a public university. In Illinois, community colleges typically offer two-year associate degrees and other kinds of training certificates. According to figures provided by the Illinois Community College Trustees Association, 75% of students surveyed from 10 Illinois community colleges said they would be more likely to pursue a bachelor's degree if it were available at their local community college at a lower cost. Martin Torres, Pritzker's Deputy Governor for Education, said many other states already offer similar programs. There are 24 states across the country that have this type of policy in place, including Indiana, Missouri, and Michigan, just in the Midwest, Torres said in an interview with Capital News Illinois. There are almost 20 community colleges across the country who are doing this today, and so the concept is certainly not new. It's something that's been advocated for here by our own community colleges. Proponents say the program would expand career pathways without disrupting existing systems. The program could aid key industries across Illinois, such as advanced manufacturing and healthcare, that are struggling to find qualified workers. Healthcare and manufacturing employers in Illinois have said there is a strong need for qualified candidates with baccalaureate degrees in their respective industries, supporting community college baccalaureate programs as a solution to bridge the gap, according to the Illinois Council of Community College Presidents. Local students who attend community colleges are frequently not traditional students, as many are also working adults with job and family responsibilities, making attaining a baccalaureate degree difficult due to commuting barriers, schedule conflicts, and costs. Moving on the front page, we also have a local crime-related story across the top. This is by Luke Taylor with the headline, Suspect to be Detained Until Trial. After hearing what he described as a clinic in law enforcement investigation, a Champaign County judge ordered that the man charged in a fatal hit and run last month in front of Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana be detained until trial. Julio Cucul Bol, 29, of Guatemala, faces 7 charges in the January 19th rear-end crash that resulted in the deaths of Chloe Polzin, 21, of Deerfield, and Katie Abraham, 20, of Glenview. 2 other women in the vehicle that was hit were left with minor injuries, and State's Attorney Julia Rietz revealed Wednesday that a third sustained broken ribs and vertebrae. At the conclusion of Rietz's presentation, Judge Brett Olmsted spoke about the large amount of evidence police were able to obtain connecting Bol to the crash. He said regardless of whether Bol could be considered a threat to the community, he has shown a determination to evade consequences as days after the crash, he was located by U.S. Marshals on a bus to Mexico. Rietz said that the crash was first reported by a Carl security guard who heard it happen about 1:55 a.m. that Sunday. She said a red Mitsubishi Outlander rear-ended a Honda Civic that was stopped at a red light on University Avenue at the intersection with Kohler Avenue near the entrance to Carl's emergency room. Data police obtained from airbag deployment controls in each vehicle confirmed the Honda was at a stop, while the Mitsubishi was traveling at 78 miles per hour. Rietz said the Mitsubishi's driver made little to no attempt to steer away from the other vehicle and did not brake until half a second before the crash. The Urbana Fire Department responded and removed the 5 women from the Honda. Police said when officers arrived, there was no one in the Mitsubishi and no one ever came forward to say they were the driver. The vehicle was registered to Juan Sainz Suarez. Inside, the investigators found paperwork from Chase Bank and Mexican identification documents under that name. They also found a watch, a black hat with a ladybug applique, and 2 open cans of Modelo beer in the console. Sainz Suarez listed multiple prior registered addresses, and at one in Urbana, police spoke to someone who said they had been out with him late January 18th and into the early hours of January 19th. The witness said they had gone out to a bar, picked up some pizza, and returned to the Urbana address, and after they ate, they each took a Modelo for the road and went to a second and then a third bar. The witness said that at the third bar, the pair got in an argument that turned physical, resulting in Sainz Suarez being removed by security. The witness said he hadn't seen him since, but received multiple calls from him saying he was in a crash and needed money to leave the country. The witness was also able to provide photos from that night showing Sainz Suarez wearing the watch and hat found in the Mitsubishi. On January 22nd, U.S. Marshals arrested a man with Mexican documents bearing the name Juan Sainz Suarez. They said he was also carrying pages of handwriting samples where he appeared to be practicing a signature using that name. Agents from the Department of Homeland Security then spoke to the man, who admitted the documents were falsified and his real name was Julio Cucul Bol. Investigators obtained security footage from all 3 bars Bol and the witness visited, Brothers in Campus Town and Anthem and the Axe Bar in downtown Champaign. They said the footage showed Bol having 2 mixed drinks at Anthem and more at the Axe Bar, and the pair sharing 2 buckets that each held about 6 beers. Rietz said Bol was visibly stumbling in the footage at the Axe Bar just before security threw him out at 1:39 a.m. January 19th. Further, security footage from outside shows him getting into a Mitsubishi at 1:52 a.m. and driving north on Walnut Street before turning right to head east on University Avenue. GPS data from a phone investigators found in Bowles' possession followed the same path described by the witness. At 1:54 a.m. January 19th, the phone was at the intersection of University and Kohler. Its Bluetooth connection with the Mitsubishi was then ended, and it traveled to the Urbana address. Reitz said this case meets the definition of willful flight after Bowl not only fled the crash but fled local jurisdiction and was only located through the work of multiple law enforcement agencies. In what the court could only call divine intervention, U.S. Marshals were able to find Mr. Bowl sitting on a bus in Texas that was headed to Mexico, Olmsted said, recapping some of the evidence that led to his decision to detain Bowl. He was a Guatemalan citizen with phony Mexican documents and a phony name headed to Mexico to escape consequences of the crash. Bowl's next court date, a preliminary hearing, is scheduled for March 12th. Finally, on the front page, we have a story by Jennifer Bailey on the Danville School District with the headline, Board OKs Tentative Superintendent Separation Deal, Appoints Interim. And I'll begin here. About a decade after she was hired, Danville Superintendent Alicia Geddes is on her way out. On Wednesday night, the approved separation agreement and pending settlement with Geddes, placed her on paid administrative leave. The board also voted to appoint Assistant Superintendent John Hart as her interim successor and approved hiring the Illinois Association of School Boards to assist in a search for a permanent replacement. Initial costs for the association's fee were estimated at $9,000, less than half of the about $20,000 that past searches have cost. The votes to put Geddes on leave and appoint Hart as her replacement were both unanimous. The vote to hire a search firm was 4-3, with board members Kim Corley, Darlene Halloran, and Alice Payne opposed. Halloran said she didn't want to spend $30,000 or more on a superintendent search firm and hoped to find someone local and make use of the district's human resources staff. When the board approved Hart as interim superintendent, the crowd in the room and those standing outside clapped and cheered. Hart responded by saying, "Wow," and smiling. He then took the seat at the board that has sat empty since Geddes switched to working remotely in October. "I'm super excited," he said after the meeting. "We have a great group of administrators, teachers, and we really need to stop focusing on the past and move forward, and this is the group of people to do it. I'm excited to lead this group, and great things are to come." He said he didn't plan to be in this position, but he's thrilled, adding he's not sure if he will apply for the permanent job. Hart has been in the district for the past 22 years in multiple roles, including teacher, principal, director, and most recently an assistant superintendent. Board counsel Stephanie Jones said Geddes' separation agreement was titled as an amended employment agreement for the purposes of the teacher retirement system, as she is within the retirement window, which requires the board to meet certain requirements. The retirement system has yet to approve the agreement and settlement pending a review. District officials said the settlement would be paid using money from a tort fund for litigation and not educational funding. The amount was not disclosed. The board has said it wants to move forward with a new leader after Geddes has been working remotely for months due to what she said were security threats. As a result of being put on leave, her laptop, phone, and all other district devices have been shut off. School district staff walked out en masse Tuesday, causing school to be closed for students due to Geddes' absence and the board previously not taking firm action. Last month, Geddes said her remote work status remained the same, saying she was following the direction of the majority of the board, which she said had voted to allow her to work remotely due to alleged threats against her. Geddes last appeared in person at a school board meeting in October. I'm going to continue now with a Rantoul City Schools focus story. This is on page A5 inside the News Gazette. This is by Dave Hinton with the headline, District Reaches Compromise to Grade Level Centers. Rantoul City Schools board members could vote as soon as today on a measure that would change the K through 5 district from its present system to a companion school model. The district had been considering a switch to grade-level centers, but Superintendent Scott Wood said feedback from families and staff led to a compromise, changing to the companion school arrangement to begin the 2025-26 school year. The district held several feedback forums, and Woods said most comments against the change to grade-level centers had to do with the number of transitions between schools, how many times students would have to switch buildings, and how transportation would work. This model means kids will only have one transition in K through 5 and simplifies busing costs, Wood said. It continues to give us a lot of efficiencies we were gaining with grade-level schools and all the benefits of increased collaboration and academic options for kids. At a public feedback forum last week, comments ranged from the change was a good compromise and makes sense to, I don't understand why you need any change at all. The need for the change, Wood said, is to save money. While the school district is in good shape at present financially, a $3.2 billion state of Illinois shortfall is forecast for fiscal year 2026. Switching to grade-level centers would enable RCS to better handle cuts. Many people didn't like the idea, however, so the companion school idea was brought forth. Under the new plan, students currently assigned by boundary or program to East Lawn and Pleasant Acres schools will be grouped with all students in grades K through 2 at Pleasant Acres and all students in grades 3 through 5 at East Lawn. Then also students currently assigned by boundary to Broad Meadow and Northview schools will be grouped into companion schools with all students in grades K through 2 attending Northview and all students in grade 3 through 5 attending Broad Meadow. The administration will bring forward a proposal for the March board meeting to shift currently assigned boundaries for some students. The district anticipates about 50 families currently assigned by boundary to East Lawn or Pleasant Acres will be reassigned to the Broad Meadow and Northview area. And finally, all students living 1.5 miles or farther from their assigned school will be offered transportation. Now moving on a little bit more on the state address by Governor J.B. Pritzker. We have a story here by Ben Selinsky, Peter Hancock, and Jerry Nowicki of the Capital News, Illinois, with the headline, Pritzker, budget responsible and balanced, but Trump's policies could upend it. And I'll begin here. An improved revenue forecast is helping ease pressure on state finances as Governor J.B. Pritzker calls for tightened spending to balance the budget without tax increases on everyday Illinoisans. During his annual State of the State and Budget address on Wednesday, Pritzker called for a roughly 3% spending increase to $55.2 billion in fiscal year 2026 that will be supported by a similar increase in state revenue to $55.5 billion. The plan factors in a better-than-expected economic outlook for the coming fiscal year after the governor's office originally projected a multi-billion-dollar shortfall in November. Pritzker also proposed a significant spending reduction compared to the November estimate while still increasing spending over current year levels. But administration officials also warned that the state is in part at the whim of President Donald Trump's onslaught of federal policy changes. The governor's plan assumes a $173 million increase in federal funding, though Pritzker named several enacted or feared Trump policies that could alter estimates, including tariffs, food safety deregulation, and potential health care cuts. The governor called his proposal reasonable and balanced, pointing out that it doesn't raise taxes on Illinoisans, though he did propose a tax hike on certain casino profits. If there's one thing I've learned as governor, there are no magic bean fixes, Pritzker said, and each year there's some difficulty that requires us to work hard to overcome it. Part of the spending plan includes significant changes to immigrant health care programs, including eliminating a program for low-income non-citizens living in the U.S. without legal permission between ages 42 and 64. Ultimately, lawmakers and the governor will have to come to an agreement on a spending plan by the end of May. But the governor's opening salvo could meet opposition from Democratic lawmakers in the General Assembly, especially members of the Illinois Legislative Latino Caucus, due to what it doesn't fund. All of us have been hearing that it was going to be a tough budget year. I think that we expected there to be some things in the budget that we weren't going to be happy with, Senator Karina Villa, a Democrat from West Chicago, said. But I think completely removing a program is not anything that we were expecting. Despite the roughly 3% spending increase, most areas of the state budget would see little growth under Pritzker's plan. About 75% of the spending increase comes from increased funding for education, pensions, and growing health care costs. Outside those areas, spending is up just 1% across the board. The most notable spending change is the elimination of the Health Benefits for Immigrant Adults program that provides Medicaid-style benefits to certain low-income non-citizens ages 42 to 64. Pritzker proposed leaving the Health Benefits for Immigrant Seniors program intact to serve certain low-income non-citizens age 65 and older, which will cost the state $132 million. The programs unexpectedly stretched the state budget in spring 2023, when costs were projected to potentially reach $1 billion. Lawmakers gave the governor authority to control costs by pausing enrollment and enacting co-pays, and projected program costs are now at $558 million in the current fiscal year. Enrollment in the programs has remained paused. Eliminating the program for middle-aged adults is projected to save the General Revenue Fund about $330 million, according to the governor's office. Pritzker told reporters later Wednesday he expects the federal government will stop reimbursing states for costs associated with programs providing services to non-seniors. While Pritzker signified he's open to working with lawmakers on what programs will ultimately be funded, he said his overarching goal is a balanced budget. Moving on, we actually have another school district focus story from Monticello. This is by Nora Mayberry, with the headline, "Superintendent, I regret not giving more culturally sensitive guidance." Monticello Superintendent Adam Clapp has pledged to do better. At Wednesday night's school board meeting, Clapp apologized for his daughter's portrayal of a black women's basketball star during a wax museum event at her Monticello Elementary School earlier this month. His daughter, who is white, chose USC's Juju Watkins, her favorite person in the world, he said, to learn about and dress like. She wore a jersey, Watkins' trademark bun, and makeup to change her skin tone. Some parents said the makeup amounted to blackface. "I regret not giving more culturally sensitive guidance, and I sincerely apologize," he said. "Good intentions, although well-meaning, can have unintended outcomes. I recognize this, accept responsibility for the unintended impact, and will use this as an opportunity to learn and grow as a school leader and school district." Multiple parents addressed their concerns with the board Wednesday. Tim Higham, who has two black daughters in the district, said that white people do not get to decide what is offensive to another race. "Blackface, racism, power," Higham said, "get uncomfortable, because uncomfortable doesn't begin to describe the feelings that have ripped through our home and others in the community over the last 13 years. Higham said the roots of blackface are deeply seated in racism, and its practice is never acceptable. He said the fact that it was a superintendent's child in blackface made the situation even more concerning. I'm going to move on to the Our Communities section, because I will be doing sports obituaries and a few other things in the second half. But in Our Communities, we have Mike Hales' records and radio column. And today's column looks at the rich history of WDWS's morning show. And I'll begin. "A broadcast show lasting several decades is an amazing feat by any measure. Last weekend, Saturday Night Live marked its 50th anniversary. SNL is the subject of today's quiz question. Name the first female singer to be invited to appear on three different episodes." And the answer will be at the end of this reading. On the radio, Monday saw a change in the captain's chair of WDWS's morning show, only the third such change in the last 50 years. The show has been delivering on listener expectations every morning for decades. It's a unique combination of news and information, weather, sports, ag news, interviews, community interaction, laughs, great conversation, and, back in the 70s and 80s, some music. Jim Manley came on board in 1973. He worked from station to station before arriving in CU, Phillips 66 to Sinclair, then Broadcasting School, WMBD in Peoria, WIZZ in Streeter, and finally WDWS. The 1973 version of the morning show had Manley reading virtually every commercial live from the copy book. Station policy was zero deviation or ad-libbing around the script. Read it word for word. Many days would find Manley working a double shift. If Larry Stewart was on the road with the Illini or handling other business, Manley would also be the host of A Penny for Your Thoughts and on the air until noon. Jim Morning Manley was a true radio friend to everyone in the community. As a schoolboy growing up in Tolono, Brian Barnhart was impacted by Manley. Even now, Barnhart quotes what Manley said on the air back in the day. In 1990, Manley stepped down from mornings to devote 100% of his time to the growing promotion needs of WDWS and WHMS. That's when afternoon host Stevie J began his run on the morning show. Robin Kaler, Dave Lone, Mark Heimberger, and Earl Finkel were part of the beginning crew that surrounded J. There were plenty of promotions, like the Five Alive Club, which listeners would join by calling in to prove they were listening in the 5 a.m. hour. Jay brought a new element to the show, taking his afternoon show interview format and repackaging it for the morning audience. It included news of the day interviews, regulars like Steve Forbes, Mike Ditka, and Brother Johnny, and the hilarious Clinton Report and Bush Report. In 2010, Jay embarked on fulfilling a lifelong dream as he became a partner in the group of radio stations. Dave Gentry's career began in CU at WLRW and WWJTX. After spending time in Chicago and on the road, he returned to CU in the late 1990s. The first time I heard Gentry upon his return to town, it was a Saturday morning show with Ken Reifstek. It was very funny radio that pushed the WDWS envelope. In short order, Gentry was doing a daily pre-J show, handling ag and more. Plus, he became J's fill-in. Gentry's versatility and sense of humor made it easy for him to pivot any direction the show needed to go. The transition from J to Gentry was seamless. Over the next few years, Gentry took the show up to the next level with help from Dave Lone, Carol Varell, Dave Shaw, Mary Lynn Foster, Elizabeth Hess, and C.W. Greer. One of the keys to his long-term success was how he wove ag news into regular programming, a unique balance achieved by very few in this industry. Now it's Greer in the control chair. Like Gentry, he started at the Parkland College broadcast program on WPCD, then went to WCCR spinning country tunes before making the transition to radio sales at WLRW. In the 1990s, he stepped away from radio to work in the collision repair industry, later taking the call to lead the ministry at Homer New Life Church of Faith. 5 years ago, Greer came out of radio retirement to fill in for Gentry. That led to a 2.5-hour daily role with Gentry for the past few years. And now, the next chapter of WDWS's morning show has begun. Congratulations, Dave, on your retirement. And the answer to Mike Hale's opening question was, is not here. Wait a minute. Oh, answer. I don't have the answer. It's not listed here. Actually, the answer is here. And the answer to the Saturday Night Live question is Phoebe Snow. I'll end this half with the top of the morning from Jim Rossow. Something to get you going today. Brock Schlitter, a three-sport athlete at Unity High, said preparing for the national anthem is much like prepping for the 400-meter meters and track. There are some similarities. Before I play, I'm nervous all day, the senior said. After I do it, I feel happy and accomplished. Schlitter will open today's IHSA state wrestling meet by playing the Star Spangled Banner on his electric guitar. A talented musician who's part of an area band, he's rocked the anthem before at Unity football, basketball, and wrestling events. I'm going to take a short break now and return with the second half of the News Gazette. Please stay tuned.